So you've led a lot of successful events for women. I saw your successful Galentine's Day event on LinkedIn. So tell us your perspective on building events that attract women to your firm, and what are some of the elements of successful events like that?
Yeah. So Anna, you do your research, huh?
I do.
So the first thing about the women is they drink me out of house and home. Okay. So I had all kinds of alcohol put away, and it's like all dwindling. All right.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Framework Podcast. I'm your host, Ana Trujillo-Limon, and it's March, so we are doing our special series on women in wealth management and interviewing some really amazing women in our industry. And today, I'm really excited to be joined by Debbie Taylor, founder of Taylor Financial Group. Debbie, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for spending some time with me.
Great to be here.
So you've had a really interesting journey into the industry, having first been a lawyer and then a CPA. So And now you're a successful firm owner. So tell us, what did you want to be when you were a little girl growing up? And tell us about your journey to where you are now.
So I wanted to be a prosecutor and a judge. And I grew up during the time of L.A. Law, which obviously I'm dating myself, but that was Thursday night TV, L.A. Law and Susan Days, like beautiful suits and everything. And so my dream was to go to law school. And I did. And I clerked in the federal court, worked at a large law firm. So, you know, checked all those boxes. But for me, the law was a little adversarial, and I did not love the adversarial part. And nobody really tells you about that, nor do you understand what it feels like until you're living through it. And so the idea of like going into a room and trying to make somebody cry on the other side, or trying to make them look like a liar, like that wasn't my vibe. And so I went to take over my family's tax and accounting practice. My father was a CPA and sat for the CPA exam, passed it, and took that over. And that accounting really wasn't my vibe either. Anyone who does accounting knows it's like a lot of just backward looking, weird number crunching stuff. But that's when I found discovered personal finance, which, by the way, nobody talks to you about when you're growing up. Like you don't even know that's an option. Right. And so I tumbled into personal finance and started my firm 25 years ago when I was pregnant with my oldest daughter. And the rest is sort of history.
So you found your vibe in personal finance. I love it. So tell me a little bit about the difference between like, you know, how you knew you found your vibe here.
What I love about personal finance, first of all, I love helping people, right? But you could say, oh, well, you know, the law helps people and tax and accounting helps people too, right? But first, I love helping people. I love that one-on-one. But I love being a hero. And I love the forward-looking nature of it. And so, you know, with tax or accounting, a lot of it is backward looking. Yes, there's tax planning, you know, planning for the new year, whatever, but a lot of it is backward looking. What I love about financial planning and personal finance is that it's forward looking and it's creative, right? So don't tell me what you spent last year and now I've got to try to spin gold out of straw, right? Let's map out next year, 5 years, 20 years from now, you know, what our spending is going to look like, you know, what our Roth conversions are going to look like. To me, that is just wildly exciting.
Mm-hmm. No, that is exciting. I love to hear it. So you've led a lot of successful events for women. I saw your successful Galentine's Day event on LinkedIn. So tell us your perspective on building events that attract women to your firm. And what are some of the elements of successful events like that?
Yeah. So Ana, you do your research, huh?
I do.
So the first thing about the women is they drink me out of house and home. Okay. So I had all kinds of alcohol put away and it's like all dwindling. All right. So that's the first thing to throw a good event, but all joking aside. So what happened is like many people, I started my financial practice and, you know, you're just trying to put food on the table and you're basically taking whatever walks in the door for the most part. And then a couple of years ago, I started feeling a little bit burnt out. And so then you're sort of like, okay, how do I rekindle this? Like, where's my passion? Who do I really enjoy serving? And I really enjoy serving women. I feel like I make the biggest difference for them. I feel like they are most appreciative. And yes, do we have men as clients? Of course we do. And are many of them appreciative? Yes. But I just felt like this kindred spirit with the women. My mom was a widow. So, you know, I grew up without a dad from the time I was 10 years old. So I know what it feels like to have insecurity and uncertainty in the world and to feel alone. And so I just really connected, particularly with the widows and being sort of a helping hand to them. So what happened then a couple of years ago, I'm feeling, you know, a little bit burnt out, like, oh my gosh, like, can I continue doing this? And then I was like, all right, let me get in touch with what's really important. And so I was like, I love serving women. So then I was like, okay, I need to telegraph this, because it doesn't matter if you have a target market if you're not communicating it. Yeah. And I felt like this for a little while, but I was fearful in communicating it, because I thought if I communicate that I want to serve women, that may turn off men clients, right? That might hurt my ability to close business. Or I could get pigeonholed into being like a second class advisor, like, oh, she can only serve women. You know, all this weird bias that's in the industry. And so I struggled with that for about like 6 months to a year. And then finally I said, you know, if I don't have the courage now, when am I going to have the courage? I've been doing this for, you know, at the time it was 23 years. I'm successful by most measures. And so I said, you know something, I'm going out with this. And so it's all over our website. It's in our marketing materials. And so then we started being very intentional about serving women. And so then about a year ago, a year and a half ago, I was like, you know, these women need community. And so I said, I am going to start doing monthly events for my women clients. And so at the beginning of last year, we created a schedule for the entire year. Every month we had events for the women clients. Most of them were at my home and they just took off. These women are loving the fellowship. They're creating all these relationships and friendships among themselves, even outside of Taylor Financial Group. They're all hanging out together, helping each other. It's just been amazing. And so fast forward, we had Galentine's 2 weeks ago. And for us, Galentine's, which we've had Galentine's for years, that is our women's advisory board. And then afterwards, we have a dinner or a cooking class or something social. And so that's what you saw on the website. We had close to 20 women there, and they gave me all kinds of feedback. And then we have fun and party. And so that's been an event we were doing literally for probably 10 years. But now we have anywhere from 8 to 12 women events a year that are already scheduled in advance.
That's really, I love that element of planning ahead too. So how you say you plan them in advance. So that's a really critical element. But let's go back to, you know, you had identified you wanted to serve women and you had this vision. And we are working on like a really fun project here at Carson for Carson Partners. That's like a challenge, like a foundational 50 challenge, which we kick off now in March. And so one of the elements is to kind of revisit your vision every day, right? So a lot of, you know, we have the blueprinting in the ecosystem, and I'm curious about, that's intimidating for a lot of advisors, or to like sit down and do the vision, and not just advisors, people, I think it's hard to just sit down and kind of, so what's your advice on, you know, kind of identifying your vision and having the courage to, you know, solidify it and move forward with it?
Yeah, I just think so many of us are every day getting up and on that little like hamster wheel, just like going, going, going. And then like one day you end up and you're saying to yourself, you know, who have I become? What type of practice have I created? You know, what type of professional am I? And so I do think we've got to force ourselves to slow down, do, you know, the blueprinting exercise, or what is my why, you know, Simon Sinek, you know, whatever it is. I talk about this in some of the practice management classes I teach. And my first session is focusing on our mission, our objectives. What is our why? Like, who are we? And I know that in that first session, some of the folks are like, oh, she's just soft, right? Like, did I sign up for this thing? And, you know, we're not going to talk about anything substantive, but I think it is so important for us to just stop and just, you know, just figure out who we are and who we want to be. So I think you need to do this at least once a year. Part of what we also do is a firm retreat where we go through some of these exercises as an entire team. And I think that's important as well.
For sure. I like to listen to audiobooks when I run, and Spotify recently got audiobooks for free. So it's part of your subscription. Well, I guess it's not free, you pay for it. But I listened to Arnold Schwarzenegger's book, and it was like 7 tips to be tools to be useful or whatever. But that he talks about having that vision for your life and using it as a guide to make decisions. So that's applicable in life as well as in your firm, right? Like, what is your vision for your firm? What is your vision for your life? And make a decision. And he advises, like, if you're making a decision, does it get you closer to your vision or further away? And that should be your guide, right, to making. So I thought that was interesting. It just kind of reminded me of that.
No, I love that, right? Is, are you getting closer to your vision or are you moving away from it? I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm curious about, you know, it's tax season now, and I'm curious about serving women and, you know, just tax situations that are unique, tax planning challenges unique to women and women advisors that other advisors should kind of, you know, be aware of and kind of educate themselves on?
Yeah, Anna, and that's a great question, because I think when you talk about focusing on women, you know, sometimes there's a little bit of an eye roll. Oh, she's soft. And, you know, like, she just has women coming to her office and she's giving them a cup of tea or whatever. You know, I think women as a market segment is, I think it's often dismissed, because there are complex tax issues in connection, particularly with the widows. Mm-hmm. And just as they talk about in the medical industry, diseases that women have are often overlooked, like cardiovascular disease is a major killer for women, but it's overlooked because they're researching the men, right? It's the same concept here, is I think often the tax situation with women is overlooked. And so particularly, for example, with the widows, is when you are married, you're filing married, filing jointly, obviously. It's a much more preferenced tax rate. When you are widowed, you're basically having almost the same exact income. Okay, so maybe there's one Social Security, maybe he had the higher Social Security, you know, in a traditional relationship. Okay, so you're giving up some Social Security. But for the most part, you're stepping into that same income that the couple had, but now you're filing single, which means that you're at half of the income for that tax rate. So what I find is that the woman's tax rate as a widow literally goes up by about 10%, okay, from married filing joint to widow. They call it the widow's penalty, and like nobody knows about it. It's this horrible secret in the tax code. And so many couples that I sit with, and they're in their 60s and 70s, and when I start walking them through what this path is going to look like once one of them passes, usually the man, their faces turn white. You know, nobody anticipated that. And they thought they were fine in the 24% tax bracket. Well, maybe you're fine in the 24% tax bracket as a married couple, but she's going to be in the 32 or 35% tax bracket. And that's before the TCJA expiring in a year and a half. Mm-hmm. So like there's a fair amount that goes on for the woman. Then her Medicare IRMA surcharge, could be the same filing single as it was when they were married filing joint. So you have higher tax rate, you have Medicare IRMA surcharges that in many instances are the same or possibly higher, and then you have these huge RMDs coming out, and she's got to deal with all of that, and in many instances, it can be too late or late-ish. So those are some of the things that then we try to get ahead of when the women are younger or they're coming to us as a couple or whatever. You want to address these issues in their 50s and 60s before it's too late.
Yeah, I saw that like firsthand when, you know, my dad passed away 6 years ago and my mom experienced that widow's penalty firsthand. So it's like a lot of clients are not finding out about it till it's you're there and you're, you know, there's no proactive planning there. So that's a really great point. And so you brought up a lot of really great things there that I wanted to touch base on. So, you know, let's shift a little and talk about our state of women in wealth management research. So in 2023, you know, we have a lot of those stats that the women do live on average 6 years longer, and they're inheriting all of these assets and, you know, having to contend. Well, the widow's penalty was not in there, but that's something that we should definitely look at next year. But what are some of the, you know, misconceptions? One stat came up that was, you know, a lot of the women will leave the advisor if you're not connecting. So you are, you know, you serve women, you're proactive about that, but some of the advisors don't necessarily do that. And so I talked to Mary Bell Carlson on the framework episode last month. I think it was February, we did the behavioral finance, but she talked about that intentionally connecting with the women of the, in the traditional relationships, right? So what are some, I guess that was a long-winded way to get to the question, which is the misconceptions that people have or the other advisors might have about connecting with women and how to better connect with them so that way those assets don't leave the firm.
Yeah. And so I think what many of us find is in those traditional relationships, you know, often, particularly for the older generation, the man is in charge and calling the shots with the investments. And often the woman doesn't have too much of a voice. And so one of the things I do is in the meetings, I intentionally look at her and say, what do you think about this? And at times it's uncomfortable because he's like, da, 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 okay? And she's so used to not saying anything that I'll look and I'll say, so Susan, what do you think about this? And there's just silence. Like, there's just often an uncomfortable silence. Like, I'm not used to anyone asking my opinion. My husband doesn't normally ask my opinion on this. You know, when we go to see our professionals, they don't normally ask our opinion. And sometimes, you know, Susan will just shrug her shoulders and say, you know, I don't know, or whatever he says. But I really try to make an effort to talk to her, and I'll say, okay, well, he's saying that you're okay with 80% technology. You know, do you have any thoughts on that? Does that make you feel comfortable or uncomfortable? Like, please share with us, and really try to pull that out of them. And so one of the things is in the meetings, making a concerted effort to give a voice to the folks that are silent. And that can happen even in non-traditional couples, right? Is you can have a same-sex couple. There is usually one person that has decided to dig their teeth in on this. And so I will then talk to the other person and try to address that. So that's just, you know, overall, I think, being a good practitioner and a good professional, if you're serving a couple, to make sure that you are truly serving the couple and not the person who's a little bit more outspoken, right? So that's one thing. That's the other reason that I love these women events, is because I do try to weave an educational component into the women events. And what I find is then, you know, there's a high comfort level where the women will start asking questions and discussing things that they might not have been as comfortable doing in an office setting or when there's like a mixed audience. And so even 2 weeks ago when we had our Galentine's chat, you know, part of the Galentine's chat was educational, where I was saying, here are the things that we're doing in our office. Here's the technology we're using. Here are the services we're providing. Here's where those services make sense. So if you're sitting in the audience and I'm saying, you know, you need advanced tax planning when you have a $2 million plus IRA, you know, that light bulb's going to go off in your head. And you're like, oh, that's us, right? We need advanced tax planning. Oh, that's good to know. Maybe I should ask Debbie about that or talk to my husband or look into that. And so, you know, these women events are also another opportunity for women to find their voice. So those are two things I would say.
That's awesome. We were talking to Camila Elliott on last week's episode, and she was talking about how when she kind of first started, one of her methods is to, she had a meeting like at somebody's house. It was like a house call, and only the husband came to the meeting, and the wife was in the house. And so she's like, you know, where's your wife? I want to talk to her. So she kind of went, you know, after the wife and just asked her some questions and got to know her a little better. And that brought her into the conversations from there. So that's awesome. So another element of our research, so shifting more to like attracting and retaining women, another element of the research, we found that, you know, sponsors were critically important to bringing women into the profession and the industry and keeping them here, right? And so sponsors, you know, people who actually open the doors for people versus mentors who give you the tools to open the doors yourself. So I'm curious about your experience either having a sponsor or being a sponsor. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Part of being a great fiduciary is helping your clients understand their full financial picture, and it should be no different for your life. Do you know what your business is worth? Get your firm valuation today with our free valuation calculator. Whether you're looking to share equity with your team, buy another firm, prepare for an exit, or just simply want to see the market value of your business, visit carsongroup.com/valuation to get started.
Yeah, so I'm very familiar, by the way, with the Carson study, and I thought they did an excellent job. So I thought it was tremendous. This is a tough business for women. This is a tough business for women. And in many respects, it is still a tough business for women. I did not have a sponsor in the traditional sense. What I would tell you is my sponsor was my mother. And my mother was truly a groundbreaking, legendary woman who was very well known in the community. When my father died and I was 10 years old and I had two brothers and she was 37 years old and she was a widow, she took over that accounting practice and she started investing in real estate. And this was in the 70s. Okay. I mean, you know, women didn't do things like that in the 70s. Okay. They barely do it now, but they certainly didn't do it 50 years ago. Right. Think about that. And so, you know, as a young girl, every day I woke up and I saw my mom getting up and fighting the fight in plain English, every day, and succeeding. Now, I will tell you, Anna, it took a huge toll on her, right? So that's the flip side of it. She was an incredibly wealthy woman and broke all kinds of barriers. But she has also passed, and she passed at a younger age. It took a toll on her, you know, fighting that fight every day in a world, you know, filled with white men who all were basically serving other white men. But that was my sponsor, so to speak. I don't know if it was sponsor or more like role model, but I will tell you that's the thing that gave me the courage. Even 25 years ago, when I was pregnant with my oldest daughter, and then I start a wealth management firm when I'm 28 years old or 30 years old, who does that, right? Like, that's crazy. But that's what I did. All right. And, you know, dealt with all the bias back then. And there's still bias now. We read these Harvard Business Review articles, and it is just so distressing to see, even in 2024, the bias that is against women of all types. And it is still out there. And so every day, all of us are out there, you know, continuing to fight the fight. I don't know how else to say that. It's not so glamorous at times. And I think one of the issues, Anna, is that sometimes people try to make it look glamorous now. So they'll say, oh, like, look at Debbie Taylor. Like, she's this incredibly successful financial advisor, right? Or look at Anna. Like, look how well she's doing, right? And they'll try to pluck one of us out and use us as the example of how attainable it is or how easy it is. But, like, those of us that are in the trenches know that it's anything but, to be honest. So I'm not sure if that's the answer you want, but that's the truth.
that's a wonderful answer. And there's a lot to unpack there. Like, Camila Elliott, going back to her episode last week, she talked about that trailblazer and being a trailblazer and the pain that comes with it. Like, it may look glamorous, just like you said, but it's painful for a lot of women blazing trails like you, like Camila, like your mom. And, you know, I love the story about your mom. It reminds me of my auntie out in Laguna Beach. Like, and she also invested in real estate and did very well. She was a school teacher by trade, but has supported herself and her life and created this very good example for us as her nieces. And, you know, she doesn't have any kids. So she's kind of like a grandma to me in a way, because she is of that age. She's older. So it was just, it's amazing to see the women who blazed the trails back then too. And like you said, it was not the most hospitable environment. It's not now. It definitely wasn't then. So it's, you know, I'm very blessed and grateful for the women who came before us, like, and blazed those trails back in those days, especially. So I think one of the things, you know, Jack talks a lot about her mom too, and her mom was a CPA and owned successful businesses. I'm really sad Jack's not here today, but she has an opportunity to be part of the NFL draft, you know, so she's, you know, blazing trails over there in Detroit, getting that ready to go. But she talks a lot about cultivating relationships with sponsors, you know, and so what would your advice to younger professionals be to kind of build those relationships and you know, make their name known and kind of give people the confidence to speak their names in those rooms?
Yeah. And so, you know, I didn't have that traditional sponsor, like you're talking about, like the study talks about, but I do think part of it is developing these relationships and being a lifelong learner. And in a lot of ways they go together. So I am obsessed with learning, expanding my horizons. I have total FOMO. I read everything I can get my hands on. I go to every conference that I can go to, particularly when I was younger and building my practice and trying to then learn everything I can and develop those relationships. And so I would tell you, you know, if you're going to be in this business and you want to be successful in this business, whether you're a guy or a gal, whatever, is you've got to be passionate, right? We're talking about fighting the fight. You have got to be passionate. You have to care deeply about this profession, about who you are as a professional. And you know, what your reputation is, right? And so part of that then is being super dedicated, being a lifelong learner, and developing those relationships. And so over the years, although I did not have, you know, any sponsor who was, you know, literally opening the door for me, you know, there were so many people that I had developed really meaningful relationships with in the business, who really helped me and guided me. And at times when I was discouraged, said, Debbie, go out there. You're smarter than they are. You're harder working than they are, right? Like, go out there. You got this. And there were just at every step along the way, people like that in my life.
I love that. So one question I've been asking that has really gotten a lot of really cool answers is what's one thing you wish people would reframe their thinking on when it comes to growing a firm?
So this is great. So we were in Vegas at the Carson conference like 2 years ago or whatever, right? And I brought my daughter, who is in investment banking, is an analyst in New York. She's in mergers and acquisitions. But she was in between graduating from school and starting her job. So she came out to Vegas with me and nobody knew who she was. I mean, like Bert knew because, you know, I'm friendly with Bert. He knows my kids going way back, you know, so like a few like people in my inner circle. But for the most part, she's just walking around the conference and she's just some young person. Right. Like when she wasn't with me. Right. Mm-hmm. So she's hanging out with the interns. OK. And they have no idea who she is. So she's hanging out with the interns and they're like drinking at the bar or whatever. And the interns were saying, yeah, like I want to go into financial planning, you know, advice, whatever, because Michael Kitsy says that it's this great profession. You can make your own hours and basically do it whatever you want. OK. And, I, you know, I'm paraphrasing. So they're basically flexing on her a little bit because they have no idea that her mother, you know, is this wealth manager that I've been doing it for 25 years? Like they have no idea. They just think she's some other intern. Okay. So she comes back and that night Bert and I were out and Cece comes and joins us. And she's like, guess what? I was just with the interns and they told me that running my own practice is great because Michael Kitsy says I can build my own hours, you know, make my own hours. And then I added on to that, yeah, and you can get a private jet like Ron Carson. And so the joke became, and to this day we joke about it, is being a wealth manager is like so great because you get to make your own hours and maybe get a private jet. And so that's the running joke in my house. And that's the joke when I'm working on a Friday night or when I'm working on a Saturday morning or when I'm working on a Sunday afternoon. Or last night I was out to dinner at 9:30 with somebody. And that's the running joke. And so what I would say is the people that go into this business, you know, again, and Jamie Dimon gave this advice. I was watching some interviews with him a couple months ago and they said, what advice would you give to young people? And he's like, have heart, right? Have heart. And that's what I would tell you. Is in life in general, in relationships, in business, in everything, right? Have heart, because the people that have heart usually win, right? The people that have heart win. You can be smart. There are so many people that are way smarter than I am, but they might not have had heart along the way. And then they fritter away a little bit, okay? The people that have heart, more often than not, those people win. And I mean win in the right way. And so that's what I would tell you, is have heart, have passion, make a difference in people's lives. That's what I would say.
No, and it goes back to the passion, right? The passion that you just brought up and you brought up earlier, like having that passion is really critical. And so, you know, Debbie, this has been such a fun time chatting with you. And as we wind down our time, you know, you're a Carson partner, a very valued Carson partner. And, you know, I see you on stage at all the Excels and it's wonderful to, you know, see you up there. So I'm curious about, what are your feelings about being a Carson partner and how it's helped you elevate your firm?
Yeah. And so one of the challenges I have with being a financial advisor versus, let's say, practicing law or even practicing accounting is it can be a little bit lonely for us who are independent in the RIA space. So if you're in like the wirehouse and you're in a branch office and there's 50 people there, right? But for us who are independent, and I do think it's good to be independent, it can be a little bit lonely. And for me, again, being a lifelong learner, wanting to develop those relationships, it can be a little bit isolating, right? Professionally and then even personally. One of the nice things about Carson is this community, right? Is I love this community. And that counts because the community, again, helps us to keep going, helps us to connect with people who are like-minded, who are passionate about their business, and also supports us. And so, you know, I was never trained as an HR person. Nobody was like, oh, you're going to run this firm with 8 people in it and have to deal with all this stuff. You know, the folks from Carson are just a phone call or email away to provide some of that support that is so helpful to us. And so I would say on a very practical level, providing, you know, back office, mid-level, you know, support, you know, just helping have our backs for areas that I need help in. And then also just on a higher level, maybe on a more personal level, is the relationships we've built and the community, which is really special to us.
For sure. And I'm grateful to be part of the community too and get to meet people like you, Debbie. And this has been wonderful. So my last question is always, is there anything I didn't ask that you would like to add or share?
No, I think you did a great job. You did your homework. And I'm just thankful that you decided to include me. So thank you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Debbie. This was a wonderful series. It was wonderful to cap it off with you and your expertise and share with our listeners. And thank you, everybody else, for tuning into this week's episode of the Framework Podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode.